On this week's episode of Devil's Trap Podcast.
Put them away, Diana. Just put them away. Let's do this.
Podcast. I'm Diana.
I am Liz.
And we're going to talk season 8, episode 16, Remember the Titans.
For some reason, that really sounded like it felt like I was about to go, I am Groot. So, Remember the Titans. Remember the Titans.
Mm-hmm. Football movie.
Mm, yes, my favorite sports ball. So were you watching sports ball this weekend? I don't know. Is there sports ball going on? I know basketball's over, right? I think. I don't care.
No, basketball's in playoffs. The Mavericks are in the playoffs, and the Stars for hockey are in the playoffs. That's exciting. And Dave's soccer team is doing really well.
Balls.
Balls.
Yay, balls. So what else is going on besides balls in your world?
So I went to a concert. I saw actually a really great band. I would like to shout the greatness of I went and saw a band called Low Cut Connie, and I think that they are a phenomenal show, incredible musicians, and a band that people should go see and or listen to. But Low Cut Connie, strong recommend. But yeah, they put on a phenomenal show. It was just super fun. It's like a, I don't know, very theatrical, very rock and roll.
So it's like, what was the genre?
Go-go dancers. It's like piano rock and roll. Like, think
Billy Joel.
Think 70s and 80s Billy Joel, but very heavy.
Okay.
But heavier. Not very heavy, but heavier. So yeah, go-go dancers, you know, like it's, but that actually like have like amazing pipes. They like sang so well, and it was just really good.
Cool.
Phenomenal show. So I got to do that with some friends of ours that we don't always get to hang out with, and that was cool. And other than that, I did a lot of work stuff. So that's why I've been doing a lot of work. And
it's always fun.
Yay. It's good stuff. It's just like going to conferences and sitting at panels. Hey.
Oh, sounds terrible. What a horrible life you do lead.
I'm not bitching. I'm just not saying it's the most exciting thing in the world.
Fair.
It's one of those, like, it's fine. So, yeah. How about you? What you got? I think you did something cool.
Yeah, so last Saturday, Wayward Sisters had a live pot, not live. Yeah, I guess like they did a live stream of their podcast. And I also purchased their meet and greet. And so Wayward Sisters, I told Diana she could not attend because she has not met Brianna's character. Like, she's obviously, you have been to cons with me and you have seen Brianna and Cam Rhodes' right. shtick, which is really good. But Brianna's character hasn't shown up in the show yet, so we don't know who she mm-hmm. is or what she does. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So I attended by myself, but it was the meet and greet was over Zoom, and so that was kind of interesting because, you know, if you go to a meet and greet, and not always the case, but a lot of times a meet and greet, it's a line. And so you say hi and then you go off, right? So, but when it's over Zoom, you can kind of hang out and you could hear all the other people's questions and like their interactions with them. And so it's almost like a bonus time and you get some extra insight into who these people are. And I think, you know, both of them, you know, as you have, like I said again, I know you've seen them at cons. Like, they're just such authentic ladies. And it's just really, they're badass women and very fun to listen to and to speak with. I asked some very insightful questions, like, are you afraid that you're going to break your hair with how platinum you're making it? Because those are things that concern me. To which I think the answer from Kim was, it's already broken and I don't give a fuck, which is a pretty good answer.
Reasonable and answer.
Relatable in many ways.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, and then during the meet and greet, I think, so the episode really was going into, was almost, and maybe it's because I'm in group therapy. And so like I do therapy all the time. That's all I'm thinking about right now. But that was kind of like what the episode was. It was about, you know, being in awkward social situations that they had and like how you like overcome them, right? And how they overcame them. So I was thinking about it because my therapist, like I'm supposed to tell myself an affirmation every day and write three down. I don't do that because, you know, but I mean, I do have like affirmations on.
Are you not doing your homework, Liz?
No, that's why she called me at home. Like I got a call from my therapist because I was bitching about not doing my, because I got mad because I got called out for not doing my homework. And I was like, I don't want to do my homework. I'm a grown up. Grown up shouldn't have to do fucking homework. Quit getting on my shit. Get off my ass. If I want to do the homework, I'm paying for the shit. I'll do it. Anyways, what was I saying?
You're talking about the affirmations you're supposed to do, but you don't do.
Yeah. So, like, I do keep, like, on my mirror one of the boardwalk cards. It's like, you know, that says you deserve, you know, like the tallest of hellhounds and you deserve the silkiest of coffin linings. You know, those type of things. Like, those affirmations I can get behind, but, like, you're strong. Like, Stuart, you know, the Stuart affirmations, not quite so much. So I asked them, like, it was like, they both seem like they're like, we're working on our mental health every day. And it was like, what are your affirmations? Let's see, which I think is a good Q&A question.
Yeah.
And they didn't have any, but, you know, like, they still, like, it was a thought thing that made them think and wasn't, you know, about their bathroom habits or something. So I feel like I won.
You were not creepy, nor were you mockable as a Q&A person.
You know, I feel like I nailed that. There are some people, you know, who I think everybody takes these things in different ways, right? And the Supernatural family, we love you, and you know, there's some pretty unique people out there. So it was really, you know, it was fun to connect with people like outside of like a con situation because there's like a chat that was running the whole time. So. Right. That was kind of cool. And, you know, so getting to hear about, you know, like almost every person, like, oh, like everyone goes to the, like their pajama parties and like, I will be like, which cons. So it does sound like a lot of people are coming to the Austin con. So we need to probably get our asses and get our tickets or decide what we're doing before that sells out. And also the Seattle con is coming up. So that was big. And apparently there's something called the camp. I don't know what that is. And apparently there are people who have really reserved spot on that cruise ship.
Oh, okay.
So those things are all happening. But it's, yeah, there's the one in Italy, Justin Bello, I know it's JIB. That was last weekend. There were some pretty fun pictures and videos of Jensen from there.
I was following it last year and I didn't see any this year. I'll have to check for him.
Yeah, that was just like, that just happened. And Jensen, I know he had a solo panel and he hinted at something that's coming up that's going to take away his time from his family. He said, you know, basically it's been a while since he had a job that like took him away from him for that long. So something that is shooting at least like 6 weeks probably or more. And I didn't find anything in pre-production on his IMDb pro page, so like whatever it is, it's still under wraps, but it should be released. We should know probably in the next couple of days based on that teaser stuff. So Mr. Ackles is something that we're gonna learn about. I don't know what it is.
Interesting.
So speculate amongst yourselves about what is going on.
Yeah, that's exciting.
What's going on? This is not AMS, whatever that shit is. I hate it. All right. So Remember the Titans. Yes. So that title is based on, as we said earlier, a sports ball movie. Cool.
That took place in Alexandria, Virginia, at a high school there.
There we go. Oh no, Diana, you are doing.
What did I do?
Our SNL character that you're.
Oh no!
You just did it.
No, I didn't. No, nope.
You did.
Nope. Go for it.
Okay. Anyway, so remember the Titans. So they took that. You know, we know where the title came from. It first aired February 27th, 2013. It was directed by Steve Boyum and written by Daniel Laughlin. So people who know this universe. And we just jump right into a recap about the fucking trials.
It's all about the fucking trials. Yeah, that's all it is. So we start our episode actually with, in Great Falls, Montana. So it is, there's a guy driving, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Great Falls.
I just blanked for a minute.
It's okay. It's in the middle of fucking nowhere. And there's a dude in the middle of nowhere getting his roadie and driving.
Yeah, drinking a beer, driving through the middle of nowhere. And
falling asleep.
And there's a guy, because it's nighttime, it's dangerous.
There's many things that are dangerous about what's happening here. Well, yeah. There's a dude, he's walking outside the road. Yeah. He doesn't have like a reflective thing on. We don't know like what he's doing, but also like I like when the guy who's driving like falls asleep and nods off, his reaction when he wakes up is to take a swig of his beer.
Of course. Gotta refresh.
And that'll keep you up.
Wake him up. Wake you up. But he hits the guy that's walking on the side of the road, of course. And it's bloody and not good. So the driver's all upset and he goes to check on him, kind of, about halfway there. Guy looks dead, so he runs and then drives away.
It's a hit and run. You fucking prick. That is, you asshole. Like, you're a bad person. Yeah. You're a very, very, like, sometimes it's hard to tell who the evil monsters are on this show. And this one, I can tell you, there went one. All right.
Yep.
So in the morning, there is a freaking eagle. And he's like one of my friends. And he's just like sitting there. He's just chowing down this guy's innards. Now, this does remind me. So I've told you about the raccoons, right? So there was like one raccoon that was, it's going to tie into this show. So there was, over Thanksgiving, there was a raccoon who died. And he was by this giant rock in this person's yard. And the raccoon proceeded to be eaten by my friends, the vultures, over a period of day. And it happened to be a day that I was driving in and out of the neighborhood with a car full of friends. So we were all able to time lapse the raccoon being stripped and moved by the vulture things. Then last week I drove by and there was another raccoon on the other side of the road from this house and being stripped by my vulture friends. Then on next door, I saw a thing where somebody said, I think somebody is poisoning the raccoons. They keep dying outside my house.
Ooh. They also have like, we have a really, there's a bad outbreak of,
tetanus, tuberculosis.
That's like diphtheria or something. One of the animal illnesses.
E. coli.
We, get big raccoon breakouts of that up here sometimes.
It's so anyways, but it was like right in the same area. But like because it was like right at that giant rock, I just think of Prometheus. It was like the raccoon Prometheus. But anyways. That's just like a fucking eagle.
It's so dark.
But that's just a weird thing to have.
It's just pecking at his innards. Yep. And the cops pull up and it's like, this guy is frozen AF. The cops like kind of checks, but checks enough, I think.
Well, and the eagle just flaps off. Like he was like, I'm not going to fight you for my meal. Like,
I don't know. Maybe. But this guy looks frozen as fuck and the bird's eating his innards. He did. So cop goes to call it in. And then. And then as the cop turns his back, the guy wakes up and runs into the woods.
Okay. So is that what you thought was going to happen with the dead guy?
No.
You thought he was going to be dead?
I guess the question is,
were you surprised when he got up?
Kind of, yeah. I was.
There will be a loud sound of Pinot Noir being poured from my fancy, fancy carafe into my mug now. Everyone, I know why this is the sound ear episode. Y'all enjoy that.
Well, either way, the cop ain't going to follow him into the woods. We find out later he won't follow him in the woods. Because bears, but we'll come back to bears. So
bears
we go.
In the woods.
fires in the woods. So we go back to the bunker.
Yay, the bunker. Let's just stay in the bunker, please. Like, we don't need to go. But then, like, first, like, it looks like the water is just, like, you also know I can never have that bunker because I will not leave it. But first, it looks like, it looks like the water from the tap is gross. Not that this is coming from Sam's mouth.
Yes and no. It's very confusing. Yeah. But either way, Sam is bleeding from his mouth and they show it in a really weird way.
He has really bad gingivitis. Like, just like gingivitis like you've never seen. The periodontist is just like, I don't know what to do with you, sir. We cannot scale your gums anymore.
Well, he's hiding this from Dean. And Dean comes in and they give our little timing update for us very casually that they haven't talked to Kevin in 3 weeks. So we know now it's been about 3 weeks since we've talked to them. And
yeah, Dean is also in his dead man's robe, the DMR, is what I'm calling it. But so you tell like there's gas masks by the sink. So is this like the kitchen? Is that what's going on with this room? Like, what room in the bunker do you think this is?
The rooms don't make sense at all, is what I've decided. It's like the library has a fucking sink in the middle of it with gas masks. Like, I don't know. Why isn't the sink library in the bathroom?
I feel like it's the kitchen. Maybe. I don't know. Like, maybe. Why is there a sink in there?
That's like a hand sink. Why is that in the kitchen?
I don't know. But why are they researching in there? I'm very confused about what this room is. But I also want those gas masks.
Well, either way, we figure out that it's been 3 weeks since they've talked to Kevin. They haven't talked to Castile at all. And Dean comments that Sam is acting cagey.
So cagey.
Anyways, but they kind of suggest that they probably need to get out of this fucking bunker.
Yeah. Dean is very Diana, being like, it's not good to like be in your house all the time. Although he nested for a minute. He was almost there.
You can nest. I nested Sunday because I was hungover. But I nested Sunday. But you still have to get out of your house sometimes.
Yeah. It's good. So Sam's solution is zombies. Hey.
Zombies. Yes. Zombies. He has a newspaper. An article that says human roadkill turns zombie. And it looks like the Weekly World News.
Quite.
It could be. But there's nothing about brain munching. No. If they would like you to note. So they're going to go to Great Falls, Montana and check this shit out.
Well, this is Livingston, Montana, really, is where they're going. And I say this because there are two attractions listed for Livingston, Montana on Wikipedia. Although small, Livingston has a number of popular tourist attractions. The Livingston Depot, built in 1902 after two predecessors, is a restored rail station that houses a railroad museum open from May to September. So only May to September. If you try to go outside of those times, you are fucked. So the Yellowstone Gateway Museum documents regional history from one of the oldest North American archaeological sites to Wild Western and Yellowstone history. There is also the International Fly Fishing Federation Museum that is an extensive introduction to a popular game sport and hosts annual enthusiast meetings. The city was inhabited for two decades by Calamity Jane and a number of traveling members of European royalty, which I think may be that Prince movie with Julia Stiles. Like, I think that may be there, but I'm not sure. That could be the royalty that was there. But cool. That town sounds like it's a banging good time. You can go to that fly fishing museum or the Livingston Depot, but remember, only from May to September.
Right. Well, they go meet with the cop that found this body. And this cop is first kind of mocks and asks how long the FBI's been tracking zombie activity. And he's like, yeah, this guy's guts were packed out and his face was frozen. There was no drag marks and he couldn't search the woods because fucking grizzlies. So there you go. And while he's talking to Sam and Dean, the clerk at the counter or the clerk working for him is like, by the way, I've got this coroner's report. They found a dude mauled to death by a grizzly. And the cop's like, it's our fucking zombie. Let's go. It's the same guy. So they're going to go. Sam and Dean convince Deputy Sprayden is his name, to stay back while they go check out this corpse. The zombie corpse.
And he just wants to make sure that they aim for the head.
Obviously. So this, they go, and it's like there's no ID, no prints that matter, like no prints in the system. But his liver is missing, but they think just a bird got it. And he looks super fucking dead. So they're like, this Dean's really bummed actually about this. They go over to the next room instead of standing next to the dead body. Yeah.
Just dude with a hole in his liver.
Dead guy. Yeah. And so they're talking about how much bullshit this is and how this is not a zombie. While they're talking, the guy gets up, just sits right on up and whoops, walking away.
I feel like wood chipper beats everything except grizzly bear. Or I guess and like that.
Wood chipper beats everything, so does grizzly bear. Yes. And so the dude's up, and when they turn around, he gone. So they gotta go chase him down. And they do. They successfully find this guy. And they kind of like a gun. The Dean's got a gun on him, like asking what the fuck he is, and like
he's
all this
being
stuff. And this
very
like,
aggressive, so aggressive with that gun. He just like has it like in the back of his head, and he's like, tell me what you know. I'm like, damn.
This guy's like, I don't know shit. I don't know what's going on, but I can't. Just please shoot me, though, because I can't take this anymore.
Yeah, and if you're going to kill me good, because it's not working. I just die and come back. And then Dean's like a real-life Kenny? Who was that?
Yeah. Nobody else got the South Park joke. Womp womp.
Womp womp.
So the guy goes by Shane, because you have to go by something. And they take him back to their motel because they've got to go test and make sure he's not one of their supernatural monsters. So they do, they cut him, they make him drink from holy water flasks.
This would be very, like, it's all very disturbing. And he's like, what kind of feds do this? Right. And
mm-hmm.
Yes, who does this? Like, this is all like, nobody likes to be taken into like a strange motel room and then have their arm sliced
and
open.
Have their arm.
And then be forced to drink like holy water.
Drink some rank water from a flask.
Is that even liquor in there? Like,
it's so weird.
How many times do you think Dean has like mixed up the holy water flask and the regular flask?
Oh my god, many times, I'm sure. Many times. So we find out that good old Shane's memory only goes back a few years. He doesn't know his real name. He just used this name because he has to use something. He remembers he was pulled off a mountain, and that's when his condition started. And he kind of was like, I can't live around people like this, apparently, so I'm going to go be an off-the-grid hermit. But one of his neighbors were some squirrely pot growers, and they shot him.
Yeah, you know, that happens. I did see that documentary. It's really good. Okay, so, like, then, like, Sam and Dean are like, well, maybe he's, like, cursed and he should have his own room?
Yeah, maybe we feel bad for this guy and we should let him have a room. So
isn't that weird that, like, they're just like, we're going to get another room? Like, why? Like, aren't you going to stay with him the whole time? Like, why are you giving Shane his own hotel room? That seems bizarre. But anyhow.
That's so weird. But he's sleeping and this chick shows up.
Oh, I guess for this plot device. That's why. All right. Okay.
That's why. So weird how that works, right?
So strange.
And she's all sneaky, and she sits down by a sleeping Shane in his bed. And he wakes up, and he asks
her
who
she
is.
Like, kind of like plays with his beard a little bit, and she is like, "Oh, he's sleeping. I'm just gonna fuck with his face." Because also, like as a woman, I understand that. Like, if you know your man is there, or whoever, just like you know, like beard's there, just like touch it,
just touch it. Well, just, you don't like poke it. That's weird.
Like, I've been single for a while. I don't remember what to do.
Well, he asks who she is, and she is pissed that he doesn't know who she is.
Yep, so instead of that, we're just like, no beard play. We're just going to stab you. We're going to fight.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you don't like me touching your beard? I will kill you. So there's a big fight. Sam and Dean bust in. She flings them because she can, apparently. She also has a very fancy knife. And Shane's kind of got the upper hand, though, on this, because apparently Shane can fight like a motherfucker.
Yeah, there's some crazy martial arts happening now.
It's pretty impressive.
This is like some Jet Li shit.
And She's like, now I'm your worst enemy.
Which I'm so jealous of. He's like, who are you? I'm like, now I'm your worst enemy. Like, I'm never going to, like, there's never going to be a point in my life I'm really going to get to, like, whisper, like, say that to somebody.
Probably not.
No, it's the time has passed.
Being someone's worst enemy sounds like a lot of work.
It does, but Nemesis sounds like fun. And so, but, so, like, then, like, she's still
pissed. Her and her fancy knife.
So she can apparently just disappear. So that's a thing she can do. Okay.
Sure.
And then, like, Shane has a heart attack.
Right. While they're all trying to discuss what's happening, and Dean's commenting how impressed he is with Shane's kung fu, and Shane's like, I've never been in a fight in my life, as he collapses with a heart attack. But they can't call 911, so they just put him in bed and wait for him to die and come back.
And then we get some really, really funny things because Sam's like, well, like, who do we know that has, like, Jason Bourne fighting skills, dies a lot, and has a history with violent women?
I wonder who.
It's you, Sam. It's you.
Yes. Yes, it is. So, yeah. So the next, it's daytime. There's a knock at the door, and it is a woman with a small child with her. Looking for a corpse.
That's
because that's not creepy. That's weird.
Yeah, but I mean, aren't we all? I mean, just a woman knocking on the door looking for a corpse. Looking
for a corpse. Well, this is Haley, and this young child is apparently Shane's son.
Right. And so we know now that their Fed names are Agent Bonham and Agent Jones. And haven't we already done Zeppelin?
Yes, we have.
Lame.
I think it wasn't even that long ago, but anyways, not, yeah, I'm sure we have. So either way, apparently she sees Shane laying on the bed, and she leaves Oliver to stand by Sam.
She's not surprised. Like, she's just like,
yeah,
oh dude, like, all right, I expected this.
Well, there he is. Yeah, so she leaves Oliver to stand by Sam and Dean, and like goes to Shane's body.
What kind of fucking and, mom are you? Like, I guess you think they're feds, but you're just like, here, random men I met in a cabin with a corpse, right. Take my child.
The feds that may have stolen a dead body from a morgue.
I'm not sure. I'm like, hang out with my child.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Maybe like, I guess like, what's the worst that can happen?
I guess so. They sit outside at a picnic table, and she tells Sam and Dean her story about how she knows Shane. And basically she like went on this amazing trip to go climb a mountain in Europe, which is very vague, by the way. Like,
well, this is also, we know like it's the same earlier. Shane was like, I know I woke up on a mountain in an avalanche, and we're like, oh shit, like she was on that mountain and clearly right. with her friends, and they were all coupling off, and she was like, I don't know what to do, and she's like, oh shit, there's this dead guy, he's hot.
Is that how it went?
I think so.
I don't know. There's an avalanche, like
what she said. Right?
There's an avalanche. She lost her friends. She finds Shane. She knew something was off with them.
See, the friends are off. They were coupling
but,
off.
But apparently she would not have made it down the mountain without Shane. And there's something else about him. So they survive. They bang it out. And then he has a heart attack and dies. And then
she's just upset. Like, this was awkward. Like, what the fuck? Like, do you, like, he dead. Like, when do you stop? Like, how do you stop? Like, do you put your clothes on before
no, ma'am.
You call? Like,
no, ma'am.
There's so many things that, like, it would ruin this. Gosh. This is just so awkward. I'm so glad this is, yeah.
Well, she saw him pop up alive at the morgue. And that's when she was like,
enough.
Deuces.
hard pass. Like, red flag, danger. Swipe left, yeah. Swipe left.
So 9 months later, she had Oliver.
Oh, yeah. So she banged and then had a baby. Fuck.
And then she hired a PI to try to locate Shane after she had her son. But he didn't turn up anything.
He wasn't a good PI. And so, like, he just took her money and ran. And
then she started trying again more recently.
But why? But why did she do that? Sam wants to know.
Well, he wants to know. But right now we're going to get interrupted because Shane is back up and on among the living again. And he is very surprised to see Haley. And she does not sugarcoat this shit at all. She calls Oliver right over and is like, boom, this is your son. Like, no buildup, no, like, oh, let me talk to you one-on-one before I introduce your child. Like,
one of the reasons this is getting to me is because we have a friend who has a son named Oliver. And granted, like, Oliver is now in college, but, like, I still feel like, Oliver, get over here. So, anyways, but she, like, so you made a child. Hello.
Yeah. And he's all kind of shocked. And then they were going to talk about.
Says you are the father.
You are the father. But Sam has been doing his research and he's like, I do think this is a curse, by the way. I think you're a Titan, which is a proto god. And this is just Sam and Dean talking right now before they share this with him. But yeah, we think you are a proto god, which was the one that stole the flame from Olympia. Yeah, so people before could Greek have fire gods again.
Before the Greek gods, there were the Titans, and then that's how you had the battle, blah, 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 blah. And then Prometheus was like, human beings are in the dark. They need fire. So I'm going to steal this. And so that's Prometheus. And Sam figured all of this out all in his little lonesome by Googling.
And then Zeus was pissed that Prometheus stole the fire. So Zeus strapped him to the mountain to relive death every day.
And have his liver eaten by an eagle. I wonder if it was the same eagle. Like, he was just like, la, la, la. Like, did he get to know him? And it's just like, hey, eagle friend. Because I think I would get to know it. Like, he must be like, oh, it's time for your lunch.
Eagle lunch. And so they're like, so that goes, that, you know, safe to bet that the woman that snuck in the motel was Artemis.
Artemis.
Zeus's daughter.
Zeus's daughter. And she's known to carry around daggers.
Mm-hmm. So Sam and Dean get to explain to Shane while Haley's there that, well, no, she's not there at this point, but she's around. Explain to Shane that, by the way, you're a Titan named Prometheus, and he's like, well, I need even more reason for me to go away. And Dean's like, what the fuck? You've got a kid. What are you talking about?
But also the way that they explain it to him, Sam's like, look at this website. According to this website, you're Prometheus. And it's like, you're a very trusting man, Shane. Because I don't know if I met like two crazy like dudes who said they were FBI agents and then like weren't, and they like had me in a cabin, and then they were like, "Look at this web page."
No, that wouldn't be convincing. Yeah, to
I mean, I guess like he's like fair. Like he's been dying every day, and so he's probably open for a lot. But anyhow,
I mean, he knows something's weird. So I mean, probably taken a lot in, you know, with a grain of salt. So. Either way, now Haley comes running in and she's got a bloodied Oliver who fell, and she puts him on the bed and says, don't call an ambulance because he's dying.
Oh no, he's bloody. I was like, he's dying. He has the curse. I'm like, oh no, Oliver got his period. So they get back to the bunker.
No.
And I will just say, I went to Google Maps. Livingston, Montana is a 14-hour drive from Lebanon, Kansas.
Long drive.
What? Did, like, the Titan, like, bloop them? Like, how? Because, like, Oliver is just, like, still dead and just, like, they throw up his child. Or did someone drive, like, 14 hours with the body of a little boy?
I mean, they might have. Just prop it up, like, in the back seat between between Shane and Haley. Right?
Does he start to smell? But also,
I don't think so. It's not, if you get pulled over,
how do you explain like this body of a dead boy?
He's asleep. He's a heavy sleeper.
Anyways, okay. So they get back. They're at the bunker.
And Haley's like, what the fuck is this curse you're talking about? I want to know what's going on. And this started when he turned 7, and then he also stopped talking. Well, yeah, because he's fucking traumatized. Duh. But anyways.
Yeah, if I started dying every day, I would stop talking. And Sam also points out that 7 is the age that boys beget their manhood in Greece.
Ancient Greece. Not now. Not current Greece. Not
current Greece, but also...
That's very young. It's not good. So Haley apologizes to Prometheus and wants to know what the curse is all about. So Sam and Dean start kind of trying to explain it all. And she is like, this all sounds fucking crazy. You're telling me that he's like some like pre-Greek god that got cursed. And now my son's cursed? The fuck. But
also Dean's her like, son's dying every day and waking up. So she's kind of
like whatever, we'll do anything. I'll believe you. Yeah. So Dean's like, yeah, so we're going to summon Zeus. We're going to work him over until he undoes it. And if he doesn't undo the curse, we'll just take him out
and hope the curse dies with him. That, like, and we know that Dean has read somewhat into Greek literature, like based on things he said. But I'm like, you remember Zeus, right? Like,
he's kind of a big deal.
So you're just going to summon him and torture him. I'm like, you think highly of yourself, Mr. Winchester. You sure do.
Hold up. So Oliver wakes up, though, because he ain't really dead, we know. So, and in the meantime, Prometheus is like, all right, I'm going to help y'all. Let's do this. And so they start doing their research on how to summon Zeus.
Yeah, and I feel like Dean is reading Greek. They keep showing a book with, like, I'm like, so you learn, Dean's, like, so, to be, like, is such a man of letters now that he knows Greek. Like, okay, good for you. No, but also, like, look at all these books that they have in the middle of the bunker that are helping them.
It's a very helpful bunker.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I want all those books.
I know you do.
I know. This is,
Liz wants to live in the bunker. I know.
You know, when my therapist, like we have like during group things, she's just like, go to a happy place. I go to the bunker a lot. all right. So they hit the books. Dean's on Greeks. And he's also just drinking a fuck ton of whiskey again. Just like, But it's in a nice cup. And we learned that dragon penis is the answer.
Yeah, dragon penis is the answer, which is just a terrible translation of a Greek name of a warrior.
Yes, it's Drakos, which is, someone likes the name Drakos, I think. But it just means a dragon's son. But I like it as dragon penis. So I will say it means dragon penis.
Sure. And so they're going to read more into this story, but basically this warrior had a journal that the men of letters were able to translate. And this warrior had lured Zeus with frozen energy from the hand of Zeus and a tree hit by lightning and the bone of a worshiper.
Right. And so Dean is like, yes, this is the men of letters. A secret society. This is their weird legacies. And that is exactly how I would look. If you were in my bunker, I'm like, these are my books. I am the legacy of a secret society. Like, fuck yeah. Like, I am like on like this Dean Winchester's page. Then, like, before we even get to like Haley's explanation of Fulgurite, we recall once again that Reese Witherspoon should have been asked, because this is the whole premise of Sweet Home Alabama, that you make Fulgurite by lightning hitting sand. But anyways.
Well, they're like, Sam's going to go Sam found a Greek pagan group that's two towns over, and they've got their cemetery and
damn obituary it, I didn't information. Try to Google that. I want to know what happens. So, like, how do you find that on the internet?
So Sam and Prometheus are going to go dig up a bone while Dean and Haley are going to do the B&E. And that's where he's like, yeah, we got to go steal this Fulgurite. And she's like, this is like readily available, man. They make cheap new age jewelry out of this.
Yeah, you just go to like.
Or make a really lovely scene at the end of Sweet Halloween.
Yes, yes.
Like that movie, it's fun.
Anyway. And so we go to Sam in his happy place, digging
up a grave. And Prometheus is like, why are you all even helping me? This isn't even your problem. And Sam's like, well, you risked your life to steal fire for humankind. Was that, you know, if that was worth it, if for you to save the world, then it's worth it for me to do this.
Yeah. You stole fire for humans. But it's nothing if I can't save your son. Can't. And then we go to Dean and Haley driving, where there's much explanation over Zeus's natural friend.
Yeah, he's like, look, I know this all seems really risky, but we've done stuff like this before. And you know, and she seems concerned that about it all and just kind of in disbelief. And like, why don't we just like ask him to save my son? And Dean's like, no, it's not gonna work.
Well, I mean, this is like, you know, the common sense. You would think like, would you want to curse a little boy to die over and over again? And like, clearly no band would do that. I'm like, did you not read any like Greek, like, you missed all that misclass of like him being like a rapey creepster, like turning into birds to fuck people. Like, you can't trust that man. Like, Haley, what are you thinking? But anyways, and also Zeus is like, so they go to
where are they going? Where do they go next? Where's our next scene?
We need to get a sound effect for this warehouse. So we go to like their favorite place is summon Zeus, who's sadly not Russell Crowe in a tiny skirt. Who is now my favorite Russell Crowe in a skirt. Is that your favorite Zeus?
Probably now, yeah. I bet so. So we get a lot of lightning and a man in a suit appears and in a trap. And Dean's like, hey, which by the way, what is this God trap thing? I don't.
They've learned how to, like, not only did we learn how to devil's trap.
We've got a God trap.
So, okay. Yeah, now the same thing. So when you summon, so like you can summon a demon.
Yeah.
Now we have learned that we can summon gods.
Right.
And now he's stuck in his God trap.
Well, Dean's like, hey, you need to break this curse on this kid and then we can all go home. So, and Zeus is not going to let Dean run the show. Mm-mm. That is not Zeus's vibe.
And he's super stoked about what he's learning. He's just like, what? What's happened?
Yeah. And everybody, he's like, wait, what? I was torturing Prometheus and now his son is being tortured too? This is even better. Fantastic. It's two for the price of one. I've been looking for Prometheus. There you go. This is even better. And they're all like, the fuck? And it's just not good. So Zeus is like, yeah, if you break the trap, I'll break the curse. And Dean's like, no dice, sorry. And so they get this whole like standoff, going once, going twice, blah. And Dean's like, fuck it, he's ready to call the bluff and leave. Like, he's leaving.
And I do love this, like, walking away.
So fucking baller.
Or like all this like that. Hot dudes, just like, we're just walking away from you.
But Haley doesn't understand, and I understand that she doesn't understand what they're doing, and I understand that she is trying to save her son. However, Haley, she's like, no, she's like, no, Zeus is appealing to her, and she finally caves and she goes and breaks the trap. So, Zeus zaps. Sam, he's Dean, free. And Prometheus. Zapped.
And then my nose sounds so dirty. When Sam and Dean try and take him from behind, here comes Artemis.
Yeah. So, and she flings and pins them to the wall. And while that's happening, Zeus is explaining to Artemis what's going on and calls it a happy accident that now not only have they found Prometheus, but also Prometheus has a son who is suffering the same.
Yeah, and his creep level is like times 5,000 to infinity. It's so gross.
It is so gross.
And he's just like so into the fact that Prometheus saw his kid die. He's just like, that's hot. But also only like watching like 1,000 children dying in unison are going to equal my pain of you stealing my... Like, and it was just like, I did not go back to look this up because I... didn't have time, but so like he stole fire, like he didn't like steal your baby, Zeus. Yeah. Like fuck you, like also like fuck Zeus.
He stole your pride, like whatever. Yeah. Like,
well, Zeus is very patriarchal to me, so like I say fuck you, Zeus, a lot. So.
Well, either way, so he's like inflicting pain on Prometheus. He's got Haley like choking out and can't talk. We've got Zeus now talking to Oliver and calling Artemis over and tells Artemis to take Sam and Dean somewhere. It's weird. I don't really get where they're going. But so she walks away with Sam and Dean.
Okay. Yeah. And so she's walking away with Sam and Dean. And why? Like, why don't they just kill them there? Like, why are we doing this James Bond shit of like, the villain's going to take you down? So, but they, so like, while they're going down, like, see, oh, I know something. So while they're walking down this hallway, Sam starts talking about how she is the goddess that hunters worshipped. And and Dean's like, oh, well, that's all fascinating things. But one of the things that he doesn't mention is that she is the equivalent of the Roman goddess Diana. So
what?
That is Diana's name. And so one of the things that this goddess tends to do is that in art, she is just out there and just loving her life. She is just living. And sometimes she's just burying all of herself for humanity, for the hunters and all the world. So we are going to, in the spirit of Artemis and Diana, we are going to share, we're going to play a game that I am calling Dim Titties. I'm not sure. Or Put Them Away, Diana. And so I am going to share with you the description of a work of art that is in the Met Museum that is representational of the goddess Diana. I'm going to read Diana, and she also has them available to her on the slide deck, to her what these descriptions that the Met say. And then Diana is going to have to determine if this artistic representation is chaste and is covered, is flirty and has one titty out, or she's just like, is Mardi Gras, throw me them beads, and her titties are everywhere. Okay. And so that is what we're doing. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. So our first piece, this is called Diana. It was done by Carl Friedrich Theenpont. He was German, circa 1760, from Berlin. And so I want you to pay attention to the classification. It is a miniature, so it's tiny. So it's tiny. It is 2 7/8 by 2 1/4 inches. So born in Berlin, Theenpont took up miniature painting in 1751. He later settled in Warsaw, where he was much sought after as a miniaturist in enamel, and he died there. I will say these things are direct quotes from the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. I have, however, edited some out for time because y'all bitches write a lot. So there are some things maybe deleted, but they are the exact words. Okay, so after he died, this work is a companion piece to A Sea Nymph and was painted by the same hand, perhaps about 1760. The attribution to Carl Friedrich Theenpont was made by Hermione Waterfield in 1978. It was left in there because of her name. This was an unpublished opinion in Department of European Paintings files. I love those. These two enamels are characterized by an elaborate pointillé. I don't speak pointillé. I don't know what that is in French. It's a pointy technique. It's a pointy technique. Mm-hmm. And so it has little dots, you know, pointillism, in which the smallest dots model the flesh tones and the largest give an overall texture to the background. A very bright pink is used for emphatic highlights. They are fine examples of German Rococo style and taste. So we have all these thoughts. All right, so we got some pointiness. It's tiny. It's very tiny. It's barely 3 inches tall. And so is she getting beads? Or is she chased? What's she doing?
I'm gonna go with beads. Dun, dun, dun. I think she's all out.
They're very tiny boobs, because it's a very tiny painting, but yes. They are all out there. And she has a little, she has a little moon bead.
A moon crown.
Like Sailor Moon?
Crown. Yeah, very Sailor Moon.
So Carl Friedrich, let Diana rock. She also, her eyes are very anime. I feel like.
They are.
Yeah.
It's like pre-anime.
Yeah. All right. You ready for next one?
Sure.
All right. Diana and Cupid. So this artist, Pompeo Bettoni, he was Italian. This is an oil on canvas. This is much bigger. This is 49 by 68 inches. So that's taller than me. Is that taller than you? It's not.
No.
But that is 8 inches taller than me. Okay. So Sir Humphrey Maurice, 1723 to 1785, son of a wealthy merchant and director of the Bank of England. Director of the Bank of England, commissioned this image of the goddess of hunting. It hung as a pendant or companion piece to Bottoni's portrait of Maurice reclining in the Roman countryside next to his dogs, rifle, and dead game. Like you do. You know, these are all the dead things okay. next to me. Sexy. Together, the works contrast modern and ancient Rome. Diana's distinctive pose is based on a famous ancient statue of a sleeping Cretan princess, Ariadne. Bottoni inserts a literal tension into this otherwise staid composition with his elegantly lifted bow, which Diana withholds from Cupid. All right, so Diana and Cupid by Pompeo Bottoni, Italian, 1761. It's an oil and canvas. It's huge.
Flirty, one out.
One out.
Mm-hmm.
Went the wrong way.
Oh.
I mean, technically. That's one out. Like, so for those of you who are posty, so this scene is classic of Diana. She's got a bow that she's like, ha ha, you little naked Cupid. You can't get it from me. And she's got a dog that's like,
my bow.
I want the bow. And she's got it.
The child's head is covering.
Head is covering one of the titties, but I think it's clearly out. The second titty,
if you look close, you might see some nip.
You can argue that is being like going through the gauze. But I will say one. We'll say one. I agree. Yeah.
One out.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So Diana with a hound. Hound by Bartholomew Prior. France. He's French. It was 1603 to 11. So that's a lot of time to paint something. So he executed
a sculpture.
Yeah. This is a sculpture. It is bronze. It is, but it's tiny. It's 8 3/8 inches. So it's not even a foot. So it's a tiny brass. Tiny brass. So he executed a Diana with stag for the Fountain of Diana at the Chateau de Fontainebleau. And 4 stag heads and 4 alert hounds by Pierre adorn its pedestal. It is possible that the present model is a conflation of these efforts and a nod toward the ancient marble known as the Diana of Versailles. Did you know you have a marble? Mm,
I didn't.
You have a marble. It's pretty cool. All right, when we get super marble. Rich, like fuck off money, we'll figure out what that marble is and we'll make something out of it. Okay, so Diana with a hound.
I'm gonna just roll the dice on this one and say chased.
So this is one out.
Yeah, but look, her arm is, there's a sleeve on that arm.
Yeah, so it's one out.
She's covered. No, she's covered on both arms. This is
a titty. I think that's a titty.
No, but look, but over to the side of that.
Yeah, this is the other side. That's this right here.
Other side.
This
right here. Look, there's a sleeve on that side, but she's got a sleeve. Go to the one on the right. If she's got sleeve right there folded.
No, that's her. I think that's like just a thing wrapped around her arm.
An armband.
Yeah, no, she got one out. And also her dog is amazing. I love this hound. That's why I picked this one. By the way, there's like 1600 things in the Met of Diana. Like there's a lot to pick from. If you just go search through that, you're very famous. But I really like this dog. I thought this dog was very reminiscent of like where Red Fern grows, bloodhounds, or just like in general, like it looks like a very good boy. Or girl. We don't know what the hound is.
A little hound.
Yeah, but also I feel like the sculpture is skanking. She has like one arm up and one arm up, so she does. She
looks like she's about to like make a pass through the circle pit.
Yeah, like I feel, yeah, she's very much, she's in it, like she's in it to win it, and you know, she just put like one away. Or this is also particularly like maybe, like I don't know, I feel like that's a titty. I would say that she could have cut one off, but it's like a very weird weird titty. So anyways, but kudos on the hound. All right. So this has got a lot of text in it. And like, so, yeah. But there's a reason. All right. So this is Diana and the Stag. It's by Joaquin Free, circa 1620. And it's an automata, which is, you know, like an automaton. It's a machine that moves by itself. It was 1620. So, those things are really fun. And so, there's 2 of them, right? And so, this one, we're going to talk about the one that belongs to the Met, but there's one that belongs to Gale. And so like Yale has one and the Met has the other, and they both depict Diana, goddess of the moon and the hunt, who was able to communicate with and command wild animals. Did you know you could do that? Mm-hmm. Have you tried?
No. Yes, but it doesn't work. I mean, I tried to talk to cats as a child. I know.
Yeah. So her power to control beasts is underlined in both objects, as her chariot is a conflation of a throne and a coach. And so in the Yale one, her coach is being pulled by leopards, right? And then in the one at the Met, there's like she's on top of this large stack, right? And so she's like straddling a stack. Both of these automata were likely used as a part of drinking games at friendly festivities.
What?
Yes. That's so amazing. The goddess in the Yale collection would have driven her chariot across the table. So this is like, imagine this is the 1600s, like witchcraft.
Yeah.
So this thing is like, how fun is this at a party? I would have this at a party now. So like you turn her on and she drives her chariot across the table, and her animal companions, like, so the leopards are animated and her eyes are moving back and forth, and there's a ticking of a clock that's in the throne, right? And then she shoots her arrow right at the chariot stop, and the guest in front of which she stops has to finish their drink. So that's a drinking game. That's
hilarious.
But in the Met's example, that would have itself contained the drink, because the stag's body is hollow. So this deer is like open, and there's like, so they put the booze in there and its head is removable. So after the lavishly decorated automaton, which includes a few paste stones added in the late 19th century to appeal to contemporary Rothschild taste, showed itself off to the table, the guest in front of which it stopped was obliged to empty the wine with the stag's body by tipping the back legs firmly and lifting it off the base and sucking the wine from the stag. So Diana is sitting on top of the one, we're only talking about the one. So it's Diana on top of the deer, and you take the deer's head off and you drink from it.
And drink. If I'm riding around on a deer, I'm going to guess my titties are out.
I have a fair assumption. And yeah, I say both titties are out. I think, yeah, we got that zoom in there. But you are majestic. It's really cool. Like, you've got like this arrow that pumps up and down like the deer's, and you've got like a dog that's underneath the deer. And how fun would it have been to like have this? There's a tiki bar in LA, and they've got like the Toro bowl. And like, so like when you order the drink, it's like Toro, Toro, Toro. And like the bowl goes like going across the bar. That's what this reminds me of. And I feel like these people knew how to party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So maybe our last one's on the last one, next last one, right? Madame Bergère de Fourville as Diana. So this is Jean-Marc Mathieu, French, 1756. Diana, goddess of the hunt, was a model of female virtue and power, but she was also often eroticized, surrounded by her nymphs bathing in the forest. Mathieu used her disguise for portraying many of his female sitters, layering contemporary hairstyles and makeup with studio props, including the bow, quiver, and panther skin. Their words, not mine. Panther skin. So we know this is for Diana. But also, I feel like this is like the Instagram, like, or like the selfie, like, station of the time. Like, come sit here. I'm going to put you, like, what, like, you just, let's make you a Diana.
Let's just make you Diana. It's fine.
Here, put this panther skin on. All right. And so this portrait is among the most accomplished examples of this means of elevating a work out of the everyday. Its artifice and self-conscious performativity are characteristic of a society steeped in theater and masquerade. Were her titties out? And I just like having that.
One
titty. All right. So remember, she was eroticized. And so I'm going to debate like whether or not I think they're covered.
I think they're covered too.
I think they're covered.
I'm going to call it covered.
Yeah, they're covered.
We got some, I mean, it's like teasing, but they're covered.
Yeah, I did send this picture to a friend today and I was like, look over there. Because she's pointing at something. I don't know what the fuck she's pointing at. She's pointing at something. She's got a bow.
But it's not the direction she's looking.
Yeah, and weird. They have like some multiple women posed with this fucking thing. They're just like, yeah, we know this is like the artist, like panther leopard skin. Like, I just imagine this at like Jean-Marc's like apartment, like comes, I can't wait to be painted, and then like, ew,
he's like, tie this on, sit still, here we go,
sit still, look over there. So
that's hilarious.
Yep. Okay, yep, that was the last one. So that was put them away. We'll see if we get banned from YouTube.
Put them away.
But yes, this was inspired, for those of you who have not heard the story, that while I was in D.C. a couple of weeks ago and I was running through the National Gallery, I kept sending Diana pictures of statues of the goddess Diana with her boobs out and just chastising her for, I mean, I shouldn't. Like, if you want to have your titties out, have your titties out. No big deal. There's titties.
Tell me to put them away.
Or put them away, you know. So, but back to our Winchesters and Artemis Diana, and she has pinned them to the wall.
Because Sam is poking the bear. He is taunting her by saying, like, yeah, you know, yeah, you're the Huntress. Here we used to play for, but no one really does anymore, and apparently you've lost your power.
Womp womp.
Ooh. And in the meantime, Zeus wants to make up for the 7 years that they couldn't find Prometheus. And so he's put his lightning hand into Prometheus's stomach.
He's just, yeah, he's torturing him for funsies.
Mm-hmm. But Sam just keeps talking shit to Artemis. He's like, yeah, you know, you couldn't even find Prometheus. Maybe you didn't want to, though. And he's like, yeah, you know, Zeus is going to kill his kid. And then she's like, well, he'll come back just like, you know, whatever. And Sam's just like, yeah, but you know that Prometheus is in love with you. He told us.
Ooh.
And she's like, wait, what? I don't believe you.
But she does. What'd you hear? What did he say? Did he text about me? Like, you know, did he look at me? Like, what? Tell me everything now.
Yeah. And she's hears Prometheus yelling while he's being tortured, and she's like, no. And Sam's like, yeah, it's not the first time. I know that it's not the first time that Prometheus escaped the mountain. You let him go. And as long as they could hide, you know, as long as you could continue to hide your tryst from Zeus. And she's like, whatever, your brain's mush. You're making this up. He's like, well, how would I know then?
How would I know this? He told me he loved your bangs. He was like, I cannot believe you can carry this shit off.
They look so good every day.
Every day. Those bangs are perfect.
And says that, you know, and Artemis is like, or Sam's like, yeah, you're afraid that, you know, Zeus would find out that that Artemis fell in love with the person he hates most. So there we go. And, but the zombie article forced your hand. And so, you know, what are you going to do? Like, you're going to kill us and let your dad kill your, you know, your keep like killing your lover and over again. So they have tried to make a deep appeal to her better judgment and potential feelings for Prometheus.
For Prometheus. And once again, like, what if this, I do feel like, okay, maybe you have read some of the Greek myths, because there are times, you know, the lesser gods, like not Zeus mm-hmm. particularly, but the lesser gods and goddesses do sometimes have their mortal or their other, like, they think with their dicks and their pussies sometimes. And so Sam's just like, I was going to play on this because I think that dude looks pretty hot. He is. Prometheus is really fucking hot.
He's a good looking guy. But so Zeus is asking all of her. I'm not going to take all that
baggage. Like, that's a lot of baggage. No, thank you, sir. But
whoa. Baggage. Like, that's a baggage carousel.
It's an eagle worth of baggage. Eagle carrying. So, anyways. Then we go to Zeus being, like, extra creepy.
He's asking Oliver if he likes being immortal and, like, die every day, but nothing keeps you dead. It's just, like, taking a nap. So, by the way, it's sleepy time. So, he's about to fucking kill this kid. The fuck? And Prometheus and Haley are watching, but they can't do anything about it. But luckily, Artemis is there with her bow and arrow. And she's like, this has to stop, father.
And only because she had her puppy. She had a puppy with her.
And he's like, I'm doing this for us. It's Prometheus's fault that we aren't ruling the world anymore and everybody's forgotten about us.
And so, like, that is, like, Zeus, get over yourself, right? Like, how many, like, how long ago was that? Like, that had to be a long time ago, Mr. Zeus. Like, and, you know, like, I think it's move on.
Well, Artemis is like, sorry, Zeus, you need to let everybody go. And he's like, no, you have to obey me. She's like, no, you're not my father anymore. You're someone else now. And there we go. So she shoots her arrow. But Zeus grabs Prometheus and puts him in front of him.
He's the machine.
And so it hits Prometheus. And Zeus is like, I never get tired of watching Prometheus die. And that Oliver is going to go on that mountain with him. And so Prometheus looks at Haley and around and Oliver and then pushes the arrow through him into Zeus. And I guess this is a magic arrow
it's
or something.
It's a God-killing arrow. It was not mentioned in any of the lore the rest of the episode. But yeah, apparently her arrow is God-killing. And hooray!
Kills. There's a lot of lightning and yelling. And then Zeus dies. But what that also means is that Prometheus is dead. Artemis runs over and pulls out the arrow and is trying to hold hands with him. But
so what happens? Like, do you go to River Styx or do you like just go into nothingness? We don't know. But they dead.
And Zeus and Artemis just disappear to nothing. They're gone. They poof out. So we go to nighttime in the woods where Dean is lighting his Zippo and they are setting a body on fire on the pirates. So this is our hunter's funeral for Prometheus. And Haley's like pretty bummed she's about sad. This whole thing. Yeah, she's very sad. Obviously, I mean, it makes sense. And then Sam is talking to Oliver. He's like, maybe we should go get some ice cream. But Oliver actually answers and he speaks for the first time in however long since he's turned 7 years old. And he's like, no, I want to stay.
So kid's like, I don't think I'm going to die every day anymore. This sounds great. But also, I don't want ice cream. What the fuck is wrong with this child? Obviously, clearly there's going to be some issues. Because the first thing you say is, you don't want ice cream? I don't understand.
It's very odd.
Yeah. So then I guess like this just all resolves itself. And they do something. We don't know what happened to them.
I mean, so Dean's like, how did you know that Artemis had the hots for Prometheus? Sam's like, I don't know, it's just intuition and luck, I guess. And then we're going to pivot very quickly into talking back about the trials.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it's also like, so they just drive away. Like, we don't resolve what happens to, we're just a baby. Like, we're already gone.
No, he's fine. Everybody's fine. Move on. Case closed. It's over.
Okay. Bye.
Zeus is dead. Seems like
Haley had her own ride. Haley and Oliver like followed them, so we're good.
Well, there was like some minivan in the woods, and then they're back in baby.
Okay, sure. Yep.
I don't know.
And Sam is like almost trying to come clean about his gingivitis.
Have struggles. Yeah, he's like, maybe I was a little naive to think that I could just will myself into coming out of these trials unscathed. And Dean's like, nope, not going to do the emo crap. You're not going to die like Prometheus. And Sam's like, yeah, but we've known all these people that died and like list them. And Dean's like, nope, you promised that you would live a long life and die from something normal, like a heart attack. So eat your burger.
Yeah. So get that cardiac arrest by gnawing on this delicious, delicious burger, which I'm assuming has cheese and bacon on it. It's really yummy. So then we go back to the bunker. So now we've driven 14 hours. God, yeah. Baby smells bad. And so,
well, Dean's alone in his room and he tries to reach out to Castiel. And he's not a praying type, but.
Because he thinks praying is like begging.
Right. But he needs Cass to hear what he's saying about Sam, what he's asking about Sam. And that they're going into the trials blind. He knows that Sam is hurt and covering it, but he needs Cass to keep a lookout for Sam and then wonders where Cass is.
Where are you, man? Look at the little bro. Where is Destiel?
so lonely without you. Benny's over. Come back, Cass. So, do we have some casting notes?
Casting couch. It's the casting couch. Were they on that show that time with that guy? La 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 la.
Me too. So Haley was played by Brooke Langton. You may have seen her in episodes of 90210, Baywatch, Party of Five, Weeds, Bones. She is also Nikki in the movie Swingers. She is Samantha in Melrose Place, which for over 60 episodes. Annabelle in The Replacements, which I just mentioned because it's a football movie in this episode name. There we go. She was Jackie in Friday Night Lights, another football reference. And then she was also, interestingly, while her a lot of her roles are not necessarily comedic, she's a member of the Upright Citizens Brigade and Second City.
Yes.
Oh, that was cool. Shane slash Prometheus was played by John Reardon. He was in a few episodes of True Calling with Eliza Dushku. He was Heath in the movie White Chicks, Jeremiah in Scary Movie 4. He was a performance double in Tron Legacy, Dr. Hansen in the Van Helsing for a handful of episodes, and quite a few Hallmark movies. Artemis was played by Anna Van Hoft, and she's been in episodes of CSI.
Of course, she has to have a Van in her name to have those bangs.
Yeah, that makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah.
CSI, Fringe, Arrow. She was in multiple episodes of Fringe. Arrow, Altered Carbon a few times. She was in an episode of Riverdale. She had a tiny bit part in The Wicker Man. She was Elf Mary in the movie Noelle, the one with Anna Kendrick. And she has done quite a few Hallmark Christmas films. Like, quite a few. Zeus was played by John Novak. His career goes, he's been in a lot of things. But a couple key points would be he was in shows like TNT, as in the Mr. T show, 21 Jump Street, MacGyver, Kung Fu in the 90s, Smallville. He was a djinn in Wishmaster movies 3 and 4. That's not as funny. He's Captain Andrews in the movie War, James in Legend of the Fall, and has done quite a large amount of voice work for comics, being into cartoons and anime. As a one last person I'd like to mention is our driver from the beginning, our terrible person, is Jason Burkhart, played that role. He's been in a lot of stuff as well. Episodes of Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. He was Little John, which is a reoccurring character. He's been in Arrow, Series of Unfortunate Events, Charmed, Last of Us, Grease, Rise of the Pink Ladies, and Animal Control. And he was the stink monster in The Magicians.
So. Yeah, it was a good group. And like, I think it was pretty strong, ensemble.
It was. It was an interesting story too. I think. I don't know. I'll let you share first. What do you think?
Again, like last week's episode, I feel like we're kind of almost searching for this mythology that's. Because we're not, you know, we had so much of like Judeo-Christian stuff to reach through the apocalypse and all these things. And so now that we don't have that, and we're kind of waiting for like what's coming down the trials, I feel like we're kind of like searching for like who are our enemies? Like, what are we doing? Like, okay, like let's have some random gods in here. Like, let's pull Zeus in, you know, like. But I still feel like it was an interesting episode. I like the characters.
Yeah, I agree. I think like you said for last week, I feel like the lore was stretched and or incomplete. However, and we can bitch about that and poke holes in that and make fun of that. But that didn't make it a bad episode. It was still enjoyable. It was good characters in general, and a good storyline. So it's hard to complain about it. I'm not going to be like, this is the best one ever. But I'm not like, why did we watch this? No, it was entertaining, and that's all you can ask for sometimes. And I don't, you know, it obviously wasn't a strong driver for the ongoing trials concept, because we like we had a couple, you know, we tied that in at the very beginning, the very end, but that's it.
Yeah, which is kind of typical. Sometimes this happens in episode 16 ish.
Yeah, you kind of a lull.
We're kind of mid season, and we're like, okay, how do we stretch this? How do we get to the end of the season while like making this work? So I don't know. But anything else?
Mm-mm, that's all I got.
All right, there we go. Cheers, Dirk.
Devil's Trap Podcast is a Don't Get It production. Meow.
Devil's Trap Podcast is part of the Ship It Studios Podcast Network. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Devil's Trap Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at Devil's Trap Podcast, Twitter at Devil's Trap Pod, or you can email us at devilstrap@devilstrappodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe, leave reviews, and share with all your friends. We're at all your favorite podcast outlets and at devilstrappodcast.com. I'm Babe. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.